Shiri, Preston. Ukrainian officials continue pushing for increased aid and new supplies of ammunition. Russia, meantime, continues its advances as well.
Ukrainian forces withdraw from the city of Avdiivka, with Russia claiming its biggest battlefield gain in months. One Ukrainian commander saying that they did not have enough manpower or shells to hold off the Russian assault.
ABC Chief Global Affairs Correspondent Martha Raddatz in Kyiv this Saturday will mark 2 years since Russia first invaded Ukraine. Israel ordering new evacuations from parts of Gaza City as UNICEF says 1 in 6 children in northern Gaza is suffering from malnutrition. Arab nations putting to a vote a UN resolution demanding an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza, knowing it will be vetoed by the U.S. The rain still pounding Southern California, courtesy of an atmospheric river bringing downpours, strong winds, and the threat of mudslides. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Today is spring primary election day. Voters will narrow down races for local offices like school board, county board, and city council. There's a three-way primary for Milwaukee mayor. The polls are open until 8 o'clock tonight. We'll have election updates on many Civic Media radio stations. Supporters of Wisconsin's new legislative map say they'll make elections this year more competitive. Beloit Democratic Senator Mark Spreitzer.
These are fair maps. If Republicans win a statewide election, they're going to win a majority in the legislature. If Democrats win a statewide election, we've got a shot at a majority. That's a shot we haven't had for more than a decade.
Evers signed the new district boundaries into law yesterday, a step that effectively ends a lawsuit before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home. This is news from WGBW and WISS. Voters in the Shiocton School District are deciding two major referendum questions on this spring primary day. One question asked voters to authorize exceeding the revenue limit by more than $2 million for the next 3 school years in order to maintain educational programs. The second question asked voters to approve $35 million for a new gym, band and choir facilities, a child care center, district offices, and other building projects. Former Green Bay School Superintendent Claude Tiller says he does not plan to sue the school district. That's according to his spokespeople. Tiller resigned over the weekend after being suspended. The school board was investigating comments he made to an Atlanta radio talk show host. They allegedly included sharp criticisms of the Green Bay community and some school district staff. A recording of Tiller's comments will be released tomorrow. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Jam from Racine, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jam.
I voted for Reagan back in the day. I guess I've been supporting more of the Democratic Party for the last 40 years or so, but people are going to say, oh, man, she's a Republican. She's a Democrat. She's whatever. I'm a human being. All these other things aren't important. We need to unite against a bigger threat. I think the threat is us becoming a dictatorship. They want us to fail.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Badgers fall in the rankings. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After losing on the road to Iowa, the Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team has dropped out of the top 25 listing. Wisconsin has lost 5 of their last 6 games. They host Maryland at the Kohl Center. Marquette falls to the number 7th ranked team in the nation after losing by 28 to the number 1 ranked UConn Huskies. The Golden Eagles host DePaul tomorrow night. Baseball, reaction to the Brewers signing pitcher Brandon Woodruff to a new 2-year deal while he recovers this year from surgery to repair his shoulder, Brewers outfielder Christian Yelich.
Yeah, he's a great teammate. Everybody loves having Woody around, and it's just going to be big to have him around this year, you know, whatever capacity, whether, you know, he pitches or not, who knows. But just to have him around and then hopefully have him again next year ready to go will be huge for us. And love playing with him. You know, there's nobody else I'd rather have the ball on the mound than Woody. You know, he's proved it over and over again in big games, and great competitor, great teammate, so it's really nice to have him back.
That's the Brewers' Christian Yelich. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Today is going to be very similar to yesterday, just a little warmer. Partly cloudy, 45 will be our high this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 5 to 15. Tonight, mostly cloudy, will drop to 27 for an overnight low. Tomorrow, sunny, 49. On Thursday, mostly sunny with a high of 48. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 31.
What's on your to-do list? Check your mail? Get groceries? How about getting your annual vaccines? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. Because we've got you. With local vaccine events and access to transportation, protecting yourself and your loved ones is not a chore anymore.
You've got this.
A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging. Funded by the U.S. Administration for Community Living through a grant to U.S. Aging. Learn more at yougotthis.usaging.org.
Hey everybody, it's Todd Alball. Tuesday from noon till 3, we are live from Chippewa Falls and Tuesday Tangents with Luke Mathers and more. Don't miss on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the Civic Media Studios on South Main Street, this is Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM, WISS.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. Sandy, I know I said we're going to talk about Ukraine, but I would be remiss if I didn't get your thoughts on Donald Trump basically saying to NATO, you're not paying your bills, so we need to let things happen to you. Well, here's a guy who didn't pay his own bills, Sandy, for a long time, putting pressure. What are your thoughts about that statement? Should we just ignore that?
Well, first of all, when he talks about paying bills, they don't have a bill to pay. The obligation that was entered into by the members of NATO was that there was a promise or a vision that each of them would spend 2% of their GDP on their military defense. It's not that they send money to NATO, it's that they're supposed to spend money at home. And the fact is that in this past year, the members of NATO, on average, paid 2% of their GDP for military defense. Now, the fact is that there are some that paid more and some that paid less, but on average, they are meeting that 2% standard. So there's sort of a confounding of principles when he's talking about being a delinquent on bills, number one. Number two, He's basically made it clear that he's not a fan of NATO anyway, okay? And that he doesn't necessarily think NATO has a place anymore, which, you know, ignores the fact that NATO has, since World War II, managed to keep the peace within Europe, which was one of the main purposes of NATO. There were two purposes. One was to unify Europe militarily so that they would not turn upon one another, since the United States had been dragged into two world wars in the space of two generations because of Europe turning on itself. And number two, it was there to protect against the Soviet Union and to be a counterforce to the Soviet Union. While the Soviet Union has broken apart, the purpose of you keeping Europe unified remains. And I think that Trump just isn't a student of history. He doesn't have a recall for the purposes behind NATO. The fact that we set it up for the very purpose of having the United States be more or less in control of a unified Europe, an alliance that would keep the peace in Europe and would give us control. It also set up a huge client state, right? Because who does NATO buy almost all their munitions from?
Us.
The United States.
Right.
And so now what Trump is actually calling for is for these countries to start spending money themselves on their own munition sources. And lo and behold, who's going to be the primary beneficiary of this? Well, Airbus, the main competitor to Boeing, and the other versions of McDonnell Douglas that exist in Europe and not in the United States. So, you know, right now the United States is receiving a lot of orders from NATO for its munitions, and it's buoying our economy. But in the long run, creating an independent European military, Macron, as you can remember when Trump first talked about this, Macron quickly said, yes, let's develop a European military. And I think the Defense Department and the Pentagon quickly quickly went into Trump's office and said, no, you don't want that. Okay. So this all is just basically ignorant talk. And it's dangerous talk because leaving countries like Latvia and Estonia out to dry could have a self-fulfilling prophecy. Those countries were, in fact, part of the Soviet Union. All right.
You've kind of already answered the next question I was going to ask you is if he really understood the impact of what it is he's talking about.
Well, I think basically the man doesn't. Everything revolves around Donald Trump, and all he can understand is the implications whatever he has to say has for Donald Trump, okay? And the implications of what he's saying with respect to NATO and the implications of what's going on now with respect to aid for Ukraine is fraught with risk for the United States with respect to the ability of the rest of the world to rely on the United States. I was not in concordance with the strategies and policies that were adopted prior to the Ukraine invasion by Russia with respect to Ukraine and NATO. And I do believe that it stirred the pot with respect to NATO and with respect to Ukraine and Russia. And that stirring of the pot might well have been a primary contributor to the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. But it all happened. And we stood behind Ukraine. We gave them the Dutch courage by saying, we've got your back, for them to negotiate or not to negotiate with Russia with respect to the negotiations that were ongoing in 2020 and 2021. The invasion occurred. We start pouring money and support into Ukraine to the extent that we have permitted them to defend themselves for 2 years and to suffer hundreds of thousands of casualties, primarily because we gave them the lifeline to do this. If we hadn't given them the lifeline, there would have been a much earlier consequence, a much earlier settlement with Russia, the loss of far fewer lives, okay? But no, we were there. And now we're going to pull the plug on it because the local political scene in the United States has lost interest or has decided that it's domestically attractive to do so. That will have a huge impact on the rest of the world's ability to count on the United States.
You know, Sandy, it's been Russia and Ukraine have been mixing it up for 10 years.
Yes, 2014 was the beginning of essentially a quiet form of warfare, but ongoing warfare in the Donetsk region, eastern Ukraine.
And we didn't get engaged or involved at all during those first years. And so when we made the decision to go in, I guess the point I'm trying to make with you, Sandy.
Well, there is a question, and there are recordings, et cetera. I think it's pretty clear that the United States was, at least the CIA and our intelligence agencies were involved in the Maidan Revolution in 2014 that unseated Yanukovych, the pro-Russian-leaning president of Ukraine, who had been elected in a national election just prior to that, a matter of months prior to that. He was unseated in a coup, and so I think there is definite evidence that the United States played an indirect role in supporting the coup.
So when you look at all of this, Sandy, and again, going back to your sentiments early on in this, and you know that's for anybody to hear on the archives of this show, going back 2 years ago and the things that you had to say about this before we really stepped into this. When you hear and see people like the Speaker Mike Johnson and others knowing what's at stake and saying, oh, we've got to go to recess, and knowing, basically turning a deaf ear to what they know is coming. And you can't say Democrats on this. This is clearly a segment of the Republican Party that has made a decision, Sandy, that we're done.
Well, and it's a turnabout. I mean, where was Mike Johnson in 2021 arguing about whether aid should be provided to Ukraine.
Well, nobody
in 2022.
Even knew who Mike Johnson was.
I know, but
part.
I mean,
right.
But I mean, these people who are now talking about pulling the plug, the right thing would have been to stand up then and to discuss whether or not we should be providing support. But no, they were there probably casting their votes in favor of whatever it was needed to do to provide the support to Ukraine, which has been provided.
So let me ask you your thoughts on whether or not Donald Trump is playing a role in this decision.
Well, of course he is. I mean, he's clearly, this is consistent with what he's saying publicly, as well as what he apparently is doing privately. Yes, he's definitely playing a role in this.
You know, because he somehow is leading people to believe that he's going to come in and fix it all.
Well, what he said is that he can come in and settle this war in a matter of days.
Right.
Well, I think Putin has also described the way it can be settled in a matter of days, which is that when the Western aid is withdrawn, Ukraine will have to settle in a matter of days. I mean, there's no way to settle this war in a matter of days without it being a compromise which is currently unacceptable to Ukraine. It is the compromise, however, that I was talking about that was likely before the invasion, which is that Donetsk would be ceded to Russia.
Let's go back to the phone lines, Tom. Quickly,
I think we can all see how dangerous Vladimir Putin is now, and apparently they must have had other information about how dangerous he really was. And even early on, Donald Trump, basically Vladimir Putin is his banker. He would just give him the keys to the kingdom, basically, and we would be done as a country, in my belief. And also on top of that, look at Navalny. You don't have to look any further. Vladimir Putin basically just took out a person that was running against him and was a populist. And this guy basically was already poisoned. He was already, 1 month before their so-called election, and they go and kill him. That's sending a message to all those people. Don't go out and vote.
Hey.
Don't go out and vote. Vladimir
hey, Tom.
Putin is the devil.
Thank you very much for the call. Let me ask you something, Sandy, about that. We know what happened there, and it's clear to say that we know that Vladimir Putin had something to do with that. What can the United States do about any of that?
Well, we can't, unfortunately, but I think Putin is sort of the devil. I think he's done badly for the Russian people. He's masterful. He has strong support amongst the Russian people. There are people that have been for many decades, many, many decades through the period of the Soviet Union, become inured to the kind of politics that results in the death and assassination of dissent. And so, you know, it's a sorry thing that they have to put up with it, and they will put up with it. The problem is that the United States doesn't have a sound grip on its policies in the Eastern European arena in particular. And yes, I think Putin is the devil. No, I don't think Putin has an intention to take over Poland or any other things. I think that the difficulty he's had dealing with Ukraine, which lies essentially within Russia, and its neighbors, suggest that he wouldn't be so foolish as to do those other things. But, you know, this man is not a good man.
All right, 844-967-2789. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams.
Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
There's a small Wisconsin town where the population grows to 10 times its size every February.
Normally we're about 2,600 people during Berkey Week, that gets up to 20,000, 30,000.
That's Blair Flickinger with the Foundation for the American Birkebeiner. The skiing marathon started with a couple of people carving a trail between Hayward and Cable 50 years ago. It's also a tribute to the ski culture of another country already hosting its own Birkebeiner. Is it Turkey, Norway, or Germany? The answer coming up.
There's a camaraderie that comes along with this event that is unparalleled.
A camaraderie between people who come to Hayward from around the world.
Make everyone feel like Hayward is their spot for the week.
So did you guess the Berkey was created as a tribute to Norway's 100-year-old race? And while our Berkey is a well-known winter event, it's still growing by adding other races all throughout the year. There's a slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, why the U.S. will veto a U.N. vote demanding a ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas war? This war is starting to really get to a point, Sandy, where people are, across the world are looking at it and saying, I think the number the last time I looked was 28,000. They basically leveled Gaza. There's nowhere for these people to go, Sandy. And I know that...
Well, in fact, Egypt is building up its border and putting up a double wall there. To try and make it impossible for the Gazans to be pushed into or otherwise move into Egypt. Egypt doesn't want to inherit the problem.
No, they can't. How can they afford to deal with that? They really can't. And it's not that I would say that Egypt is unmindful and not caring about those people, but clearly it's to bring in 2 million people is more than a notion for any nation, right? So where we are, Sandy, with this is they've leveled Gaza and these hostages are still out there. And even Hamas has offered, hey, let's do a ceasefire. Let's work on this. Let's try to figure what's happening right now. For the most part, Sandy, is not going to be the solution. By continuing this, they're not going to get the hostages back by continuing this. And then to invade, what is the name of that?
Rafah.
Yes.
Well, Rafah is the city that's right on the border with Egypt. And there is a Rafah gate that is actually the way you get from Gaza into Egypt. And it's sort of the southernmost point. And it's a bit like herding cattle. They've pushed the people of Gaza to the south. Now they're all sort of stacked up in Rafah. And now they're talking about a ground invasion of Rafah, which would obviously be fraught with risk for all of the civilians there, unless they can figure out a way to around that. And I know the United States has indicated that they're pushing Israel to make sure that there is some form of strategy to provide safety to the civilians in Rafah. I think they're also now discouraging Israel from carrying out its ground invasion of Rafah. It's surprising. The UN resolution, first of all, UN resolutions aren't self-effectuating. So how you vote on it is just cosmetic, okay? And it's interesting to me that the United States still cosmetically finds it necessary to veto a resolution calling for a ceasefire. Obviously, it's they're doing that to show unity with Israel. But on the, at the same token, I think the rest of the world, many people in Israel, lots of people in the United States, would like to see the United States exert a great deal of influence on Israel to move in the direction of a non-military solution here to the rest of the problem.
Well, you know, Sandy, I don't know if it was this past Sunday on Meet the Press or it might have been earlier, and Benjamin Netanyahu was being interviewed, and he clearly said, you know, they're going to do what they have to do, regardless of what America is saying, and that's to eradicate Hamas. And so, you know, Joe Biden is in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because if he refuses to financially support Israel, he stands a chance on having people who would probably vote for him turn against him. He's also going to face that same other side of the coin by having, you know, Muslims and Palestinians in this nation and others who, and younger people who say the direction that he's going with this to continue to support Israel in this war, they're not supporting that and they're willing to not vote. So where does he go with this?
Well, I think he's trying to walk that tightrope. I think he's talking about exerting influence on Israel to abate its military movements and ground invasion and to work in the direction of humane resources being provided to Gaza. He's talking about all that. I presume we're doing all that. But, you know, the problem is that Israel, in many respects politically, is a tail that wags the dog, and they have a great deal of, and Netanyahu knows they have a, there's a great deal of sort of leverage that Israel has in the United States. But I think that Biden's going the right direction on this. I think he is in fact exerting a great deal of influence. I think it's coming forth in the fact that there have been ceasefires. I think Israel has been conducting itself with more care in what it's been doing. But you know, I think the world wants in particular there to be a movement towards a two-state solution. And Netanyahu has been unusually direct and adamant about how negative he is about a two-state solution. And I think in the long run, that's going to do Netanyahu in.
You know, Sandy, the United Nations is saying that there's a crisis, starvation, that, you know, people with sicknesses and all of those things that go along with the war, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Gaza is the site of a humane tragedy. And there is disease and starvation. A significant percentage of the people in the world who are starving are in Gaza.
Yeah, and so that's the part of this that I think the United Nations focuses on. They may not focus on the other aspects of it, but they do see a humanitarian crisis that is building and getting worse every day. And I think at the root of that and at the end of that is where, you know, unfortunately, Biden is going to sink or swim.
Well, like I said, it's a tightrope. And I do think his administration is trying to walk it rather effectively. But in the long run, it is like you said, a rock in a hard spot. And I don't think there's any way to get out of that position without some downside. And I think, therefore, that if that's the case, then I think he probably will become more forthright and more vehement about trying to exercise pressure on Israel to be more moderate.
All right. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Up next, news, weather, and sports.
Yeah. you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Now that Wisconsin has new legislative district boundaries, Republicans say they're eager to look ahead. State Representative Tony Kurtz tells Civic Media's Phil Nee work can begin on the 2024 campaigns.
Our clerks, who work so very hard on all our elections, now it gives them time to do what they need to do to marry up their voting precincts with who's going to be in those areas.
Kurt says he does not expect a lawsuit to try to delay the new maps from taking effect. The new maps will mean a lot of changes and a lot of tough decisions for state lawmakers. WisPolitics reports 21 state lawmakers are now drawn into the same districts, including 6 in the Senate and 11 in the Assembly. Some lawmakers say they plan to move in order to try to stay in office. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home. This is news from WGBW and WISS. Green Bay police are asking for the public's help in finding an alleged armed robber. It happened at the El Ranchito restaurant late Saturday afternoon. Police say they don't know how much money he got. Police say the suspect is about 6 feet tall and weighs about 200 pounds. At the time of the robbery, he was wearing a black mask, a light-colored hooded sweatshirt, dark pants, and white shoes, and carrying a blue backpack. UW-Oshkosh is considering more changes in hopes of saving at least $1.5 million this year. UWO has already laid off some staff, enacted furloughs for the rest, and closed its 2-year branch campus in Fond du Lac. Now the university is considering going from 4 colleges to 3. No programs or majors would be cut. Campus officials say the savings would come from streamlining administrative responsibilities. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
Civic Media's Rich LoCascio. Could you introduce me as a wrestler right now? You could call me like the Punching Bag or the Patsy or something.
From Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Punching Bag, Pete Schwabba.
Now I'd be looking across the ring at my opponent's eyes getting really wide as he got ready to wail on me.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. American Idol judge Lionel Richie admitted he made a mistake by leaving Madonna out of the We Are the World production in the mid-1980s. The music legend appeared last week on Jimmy Kimmel Live to discuss his new Netflix documentary, The Greatest Night in Pop. Richie said there was only a half a line to sing, so the voice had to be very recognizable. Therefore, they chose Cyndi Lauper over Madonna. When Kimmel told Richie he felt it was a mistake leaving Donna out and not using both singers, Richie agreed. Such a shame. It could have really put Madonna on the map. The Greatest Night in Pop is available on Netflix. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos and girlfriend Lauren Sanchez were seen dining with another couple over Peking duck. It was in a Miami strip mall food court, so no reservations were necessary. Bezos admitted the place wasn't his first choice, but Zavarro had a really long line. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Today is going to be very similar to yesterday, just a little warmer, partly cloudy. 45 will be our high this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 5 to 15. Tonight, mostly cloudy. We'll drop to 27 for an overnight low. Tomorrow, sunny, 49. On Thursday, mostly sunny with a high of 48. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 31.
After my wife died, I felt like I lost everything, including my love of fishing. But one day, my granddaughter called, and I realized I still had a lot to look forward to. I got referred to a psychiatrist who explained depression can happen to anyone. Getting help doesn't make me weak. It makes me stronger. I just wish it made me better at fishing.
Mental health care is working for Diego. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Your home for Mino and the Mayor in the morning. Weekdays from 6 till 8. Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM, WISS.
find ourselves in a world of our own.
As we stroll along together, holding hands, walking all alone, so in love are we two that we don't know what to do, so in love, in the world of our own. As we stroll by the sea together, under stars twinkling high above, so in love are we two, no one else but me and you, so in love, so much in love.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, we can talk about, there's so many different things happening this year, and that have been going on over the last, you know, 5-6 years. You and I have been around a while. We've seen a lot of different things that kind of make you stop and pause and ask about the fabric of our nation and where we are right now. I was talking with the Democrats on last night, and I was saying that you just, you know, maybe I'm a pessimist. I don't know. But Sandy, if we don't get this fixed, and somehow I don't think we can get it fixed, even let's say Donald Trump loses the election, we're not going to get it fixed by him losing, because there'll be his minions aren't going to let it go. And so, Sandy, how do we begin to build the right dialogue to heal a wounded nation based on these political issues that are going to tear the nation asunder if we're not able to sit down and have dialogue?
Well, I think the real problem is that, at least from Donald Trump's standpoint, his issue is, and his followers have adopted the notion that the issue is Donald Trump. Okay, is Donald Trump being treated fairly? Is Donald Trump, you know, it's all about Donald Trump. It's not about the policies he would implement. In fact, when it comes time to talk about that, he just says, don't worry, I'll fix it. Okay, don't bother me with details, and I won't bother you with any because, you know, I'm Donald Trump. It's almost like a superhero kind of a person. His following has developed Donald Trump into a martyred superhero. And that context doesn't really support dialogue, okay, or conversation or healing, because when you turn a group into essentially a cult of personality, you've gotten rid of and moved away from talk about substantive issues. So all that we hear about now from Donald Trump is about Donald Trump. Is he being treated fairly? Is he the subject of a witch hunt? Is he going to be allowed to bring back the glory that is and what will be whatever Donald Trump can create? You know, it's a cult of personality. It's not a discussion of policy. It's not a discussion of a disagreement over anything. It's Donald Trump against the United States of America institutions.
You know, Sandy, I saw the speaker, Mike Johnson. He went down to Mar-a-Lago on yesterday, the Speaker of the House, to sup with a guy who is a candidate And then he gave the thumbs up with Trump as if I'm here taking orders. It, even just the look of that doesn't make any sense. That the Speaker of the House of the United States government has to go down and basically kiss the ring of a guy who's, you know, running for president. It makes no sense.
Well, like I said, and there's nothing in the articles that would suggest there's a discussion of policy, okay? Any sort of policy at all. It's just that he's supplicating to Donald Trump because Donald Trump has become almost at a liturgical level of sanctity with respect to those people who feel strongly about Donald Trump. And like I said, I think the problem is that it's the dark state. It's the witch hunt. All of that is what Donald Trump is running on, and he's getting people to buy into it. All of that is running against the institutions of the government of the United States of America.
So people have chosen this guy over our government because he says our government's no good.
And the proof of the government being no good is that it's after him.
Right.
You know, that he didn't get elected in the last election, ergo election was rigged, meaning that somehow a dark force was out there causing it not to go the way it otherwise would have gone, which would have been his victory. And then, two, all of what happens to him is not his fault, not his doing, not the result of submitting fraudulent appraisals to banks and what have you. It's because he's the subject of the martyred subject of a witch hunt. People are out to get him.
You know, the other part of it, Sandy, is they're not thinking clearly. I think many of the MAGA supporters, because you hear lame duck president, a guy with only one term left. And every second-term president is considered lame duck, right?
Yep.
Not going to be able to get anything accomplished. Trump is going to come in as a lame duck.
Well, he's already talking about how he's going to figure out a way to get around that. Of course, at that point, when he runs again, he'll be older even than Joe Biden is now running for president if he ran for another term after a term were he to be elected in 2024. But, you know, I think that it's a sorry thing, because I think what's happened is that he's been able to play the chord of the frustration of people with respect to government, and he's played it very effectively, and in the process, he's destroying everyone's faith in government, and that is a very big problem, much bigger problem than Donald Trump's personality, a much bigger problem than whatever you can say about Donald Trump personally or politically. The problem is that he is running against the institutions of the United States of America.
Well, you know, Sandy, he's not the only person who doesn't believe in government. What, 50% of the people don't vote? So there's already a large segment of the population that doesn't agree and doesn't believe that our government serves any purpose.
Well, I don't think not voting is that. I think not voting, however, is a sign of frustration or futility. And so there's a lot of frustrated people who feel futile with respect to what it is their government does. And that's pretty easy to convert into cynicism about government. And, you know, we should understand that, you know, I don't know how many people are counted as being Trump supporters, diehard Trump supporters, but it might be 40 million or 50 million people. We have 335 million people in this country. So it's by no means a majority. It's just a very powerful vocal force, and it's very active, so that it apparently, much like the Tea Party was able to frighten candidates into submission and worry about running against a primary opponent, the main thing that Trump has going for him is that there seem to be plenty of people lying in the weeds who are Trump supporters who are willing to come forth and indicate that they'll run as a Trump candidate. Do I remember Earl Campbell?
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, Sandy, I would say to you, no, that it was, what was the guy's name? It wasn't Earl Campbell. He was, I forgot the guy's name, who ran, Dallas Cowboy running back. Herschel Walker.
Herschel Walker.
Yeah. But I will say to you, Sandy, that this yeah, it was Herschel Walker.
Oh, it was Herschel Walker, not Earl Campbell.
Not Earl Campbell.
Oh, I had that wrong.
Yeah, but that's okay. But here's
they both might have been number 34.
No, but here's the thing, Sandy. And our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. People don't talk about government. It's not something that in our daily lives we spend time talking about. The government is something that's out there that we are living our lives, and we don't ever look at the government as something, an entity that makes a difference in our lives. We don't see it, even though it's there, law enforcement, and other things. But people don't see government as an assistance to their lives. They see it as a detriment. And so how do we fix that? How can government be a better, find a better way to sell itself? Because I think that's what needs to happen in a way. Government's got to figure out a way to sell itself to the American people.
Well, I agree with you. You know, I think the institutions, broadly speaking, people are frustrated. I think that the notion that government was your enemy was fostered in the 80s, Reagan. The idea of strangling government of money was a pretty convenient thought because it came with tax reductions in Grover Norquist. And that has, it has sort of, there's the vintage of that. It has brewed and stewed to the point where I think now a substantial number of Americans teeter on the brink of saying, look, government's is a ineffective and something that I want less of, not more of. And government has had trouble explaining itself to the people. You know, all the ways that it is actually there to protect us. I think the legacy of the FDR period is waned, okay? And the notion that what he brought to us was government for us, to support us, to protect us, has waned, and we've lost sight of it. The deal no longer looks the same.
Yeah, and you know, Sandy, the older our generation gets, the more removed from that our nation becomes. And so, you know, in the coming years and decades, it'll be even further away. And my fear is that there'll be people who, and even you kind of can see it right now, who believe the government is a waste of our dollars. It's a waste of our time. It's intrusive. It is something we don't need. And yet they don't understand that throughout every aspect of our life, government is intertwined.
Well, you know, it leads us to do things like to attack the FBI, but not talk about what the alternative is or what's the fix, or to attack whatever, you know, the various institutions of government. And my question is, what's the end game here? Okay, there's something wrong with it. Shouldn't we fix it? But we never get around to the fix talk. We only get around to the talking about what's wrong with it.
Well, and to constantly say we've got the greatest government in the world, and there are citizens and others who will say that, and they used to say that more. Let me ask you, patriotism and government, shouldn't they be one and the same?
Well, you would think that a patriot would be standing behind his government. But patriotism has become something different than that. It's almost, there's a whole group of people who view themselves as patriots who are standing against the government.
Right.
You know, view the government as an intrusion on what they think is truly American. And so, you know, Americanism and patriotism have become sort of a congealed notion that has little or nothing to do with the government of the United States and has everything to do with the person's vision of what it is that America is like or should be like, the outgrowth of this has become like Christian nationalism.
Sandy, I want you to hold that thought. We're gonna delve a little deeper into that. 844-967-2789. You know, it's Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams.
This
This is Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
I joined the Carpenters Union 15 years ago as an apprentice. Got free training and have been able to advance. Now I'm a superintendent running high-profile projects in Green Bay that change the city skyline. I'm looking for skilled and experienced carpenters. If you want to join my team with great pay, better benefits, and a chance to advance, apply today. Call 920-469-1146 to apply. That's 920-469-1146.
Mino and the Mayor.
Hey, if I could find my grandma's recipe for grappa, maybe we could do that.
A moonshine?
Grappa.
Oh, grappa's not moonshine?
We don't like that term.
The Italians don't like the Kentucky or what?
And that's what it said on the arrest papers. That's right. You're one of the few guys I know that the grandma did time.
Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
And on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
You kind of scared yourself, you turn and run. But if you have a change of heart, Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't want to call nobody else. Send it off in a letter to yourself.
Welcome back to what is the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning to you, Bill. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Earl. You do a super job, you and Sandy. I got to ask you guys, don't you think this year, 2024, spring or late winter, whatever you want to call it, we have more hope for our country than we've had in a long time? The House of Cards of, you know, supporting a sexual predator and 91 felonies and all that, that's falling apart. That's just literally eroding in front of our eyes, self-destructing.
Do you think
I think 2020...
Bill, do you really think that the Donald Trump bandwagon is falling apart?
Oh, absolutely. I think I can prove it, Earl.
Okay, go ahead.
So I can prove it.
Go ahead.
If you watch his promotions or his rallies and all that, they're not gaining strength. They're losing strength.
That's true.
They'll do everything to create an illusion of a giant rally when it's a joke, when it's a just laughing joke. And then when you go on, you turn on national news, or let's go to Fox or whatever, national news, and our country is still addressing a man as capable of running for president with that kind of baggage, that's an insult to our intelligence, Earl. Everybody's. And sooner or later, in my classes, I attack it and talk about it, even though it's Christian leadership. And I said, we cannot fall for a man like that. They're not arguing with me anymore. So I want your opinion, Earl. You know a lot more people than I'll ever know, Earl. And Sandy, what do you guys think?
Sandy?
Well, I can hope. I can hope. But he still seems to have a lot of traction. He still seems to be locked in to get the nomination. And so I think what he is doing, however, is continuing to display the real self that he is and to present to more people, if they have their eyes open, the dangers that he presents.
You know, Bill said he kind of sees the turning of the corner. in our nation. And it's always good to be hopeful.
Well, we'll see how Nikki Haley does. I mean, you know, she's the lone...
She's probably going to...
lose in South Carolina.
She's probably going to bow out. I got to think.
Well, I don't. I'm not sure of that. I think she's got plenty of money behind her, and I think she's increasing her vehemence with respect to her direct attacks. So I'm kind of thinking she's not going to bow out very quickly. But you know, I think I'm going to read this again. Tom called about this, and this is something Alexander Hamilton wrote long ago. Okay, he's one of the founders, one of the people that particularly conservatives like to lean on as being one of the prescient few who knew what was in store for the country. He wrote this: when a man unprincipled in private life, desperate in his fortune, bold in his temper, despotic in his ordinary demeanor, known to have scoffed in private at the principles of liberty, when such a man is seen to mount the hobby horse of popularity, to join in the cry of danger to liberty, to take every opportunity of embarrassing the general government and bringing it under suspicion, to flatter and fall in with all the nonsense of the zealots of the day, it may justly be suspected that his object is to throw things into confusion that he may ride the storm and direct the whirlwind. Now, it's almost like he knew what was going to happen 250 years later. But, you know, those what is described there is exactly,
Donald Trump.
Is Donald Trump.
Those
scoffed in private at the principles of liberty, to join in the cry of danger to liberty. You know, that's his cry about the deep state and the fact that he's being attacked. Is he's saying that that's an attack on liberty. His reaction to the death of Navalny was to turn it around on himself and to say, when I saw the death of Navalny, it made me think of what's happening to me and the country.
So what people need to get out of what you just read, Sandy, is the fact, a warning.
You know, Alexander Hamilton's warning, but we have people who knew him firsthand. Liz Cheney.
Right.
The secretaries in his cabinet, many of the people who served him privately, prior chief of staff. All of these people say, look, this man should not be elected president.
Yeah. The hope, Sandy, is that the clarion call is answered and that people really understand that. But thank you as always. Thank you for a great show. Thank you, Calvin. Up next, Greg Baugh and Jane Matinere on Matinere On Air. Hey, get out and enjoy what it's supposed to be 52 degrees. See you guys on tomorrow. Sandy, that.
For the Devil's Advocates, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM WISS. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. Biomarker testing was a turning point for me. By working with my oncologist, we were able to determine the most appropriate treatment plan. My fear was I wasn't going to be here to see my children grow up. That gave me hope, knowing that I have that chance. And I did. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252DR Oshkosh, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Capital One Financial buying Discover Financial Services in a deal worth $35 billion.